Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Dance Monkey Dance. I'm Chris.
I'm John.
How you doing, John?
Oh, I'm doing great. Things are getting interesting here in Florida.
They're getting interesting everywhere.
Well, in just a few weeks, you'll be able to open carry. I think that's awesome.
Oh, you can already do that in South Carolina.
Oh.
All of that kind of stuff happens here first and then, you know, trickles down into the other red states. And,
oh, okay.
Yeah. It's not an uncommon sight.
Wild, wild west.
Yeah. Well, it's not an uncommon sight to go into Lowe's or Home Depot here and every other guy with a flannel shirt is, you know, open carrying. And it's like, all right, sure. Would it so I can just imagine the uproar when they try to open carry into the theme parks.
Well, it's private property.
Yeah, but they're not going to want to hear that.
Well, it doesn't matter.
There was a shootout today at Universal Studios.
Yeah, right.
And the open carry people tried to get in. Yeah, what a weird week.
I wonder if that's why Disney started putting the turnstiles back.
Oh, you think so?
Well, they had done away with them. So all you had to do is like tap your thing and walk right through. But that also means they did away with the gates.
Okay.
So they've started reinstalling them.
Interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know how much you want to talk about what happened this week. I'm not sure how much we should talk about it.
Yeah, it's getting to the point where you shouldn't say anything or...
Yeah.
You'll be grabbed off the street.
Yeah, I think we'll just say it was a fucked up week and leave it at that. Everybody knows what happened.
Yeah.
You all have your own opinions on it. I'm sure we have our own opinions on it and... I will say no matter what side you come down on, violence is never the answer, no matter who it is.
Yeah.
So we'll just leave it there. You know, we both live in states where the wrong thing to the wrong person would set these people off. So
mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Yep. Although it is probably the first time in history that a podcaster was honored with half-mast flags at Disney World.
So I told my kid that when I die, I want her to petition Congress to let me lay in state if they're letting podcasters do it now.
Right.
I figured, hey, why not? Right? I mean, they set a precedent, so I would like to see all the podcasters, like, it'd be a weekly thing, right? Once we all start, like, kicking the bucket. It's like, which podcaster is laying in state this week? So, yeah. What a weird week it's been.
Yes. Sad. It's also been kind of a tragic week, celebrity-wise.
I only know of one, so maybe I missed some.
Two were musicians.
Okay. Who were they?
So the first was Rick Davies, who was one of the founding members of Supertramp.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Died at 81 after a 10-year battle with blood cancer.
Oh, man. Fuck cancer. Although 81, I mean, he fought in the later part of his life and beat it for a while.
Yeah. Yep.
Who was the other musician?
The other one was one of the founding members of the Turtles, who died at 78.
Oh, okay.
Mark Volman.
Okay.
Died after a brief unexpected illness.
Sounds like cancer.
Yeah. their songs. Probably heard Happy Together. They did a cover of Dylan's It Ain't Me that did really well in the charts.
So
one of those groups that like continue to tour.
Yeah.
Like up until recently.
So I have a weird connection to that then. When I was in college, one of the classes in the program that I was in was MIDI programming. And
okay.
Because I went to school for audio and audio recording, they felt that it was important to have a background with MIDI so that if you had musicians come in with MIDI instruments, you'd know how to use them and whatever. And the final assignment was they taught us basically how to play piano. And I had learned basic chords before I'd gone to college. And we had to do a final project with, like making a background track for a song, and I did Happy Together. And so I engineered this entire background track to Happy Together, but I did it more in like an EDM style. So it was like an EDM version of Happy Together. So,
okay.
And I got an A on it. So, you know, for what it's worth. But, yeah, when you mentioned that, I was like, oh yeah. Okay. Cause I spent a lot of time listening to that song for that project. So yeah.
Right.
Anyway. The death that I heard about was Polly Holiday.
Yep.
Who just recently passed away this week at the age of 88. If you are a child of the late 70s, early 80s, you knew her from Alice. She played Flo, Kiss My Grits. She was also Mrs. Deagle in the Gremlins. The first Gremlins movie. She got shot through a window on one of those chair lift things. Yeah, so she was a huge part of my childhood. Alice was one of those shows that was on like every day in reruns when I was growing up. So I knew her from that a lot.
Yeah.
She was also Mrs. Doubtfire. She was in the remake of The Parent Trap with a young Lindsay Lohan.
She was she Tim Allen's mother in Home Improvement?
Her listing for that says Lily Patterson. So I don't know. She did 5 episodes though.
Yeah, I thought she was Tim's mother.
Okay.
But who knows? But yeah.
Yeah. She's a...
I mean, 4 Emmy nominations for that one role she did.
Yeah.
That's kind of says a lot.
I mean, I remember like Kiss My Grits was like the kid equivalent in my neighborhood of Go Fuck Yourself. Like when that was on, when we were kids, like if you wanted to tell a kid to go fuck themselves, you just be like, Kiss My Grits and like walk away. So yeah, she hasn't really acted in anything on screen since 2010. So I'm assuming that at some point she just retired and was like, you know, I'm too old for this.
Oh, she played Jill's mother on Home Improvement.
Okay. So,
which apparently there's going to be a Home Improvement reunion on the new Tim Allen sitcom.
God. Oh, I think I saw all 3 kids together.
No, it's actually It's Al and Debbie and Jill.
Oh, they're leaving the kids out?
Well, I don't think you want Tara Noah Smith because he's kind of batshit crazy now.
And the other one's a wife beater.
And he already had, what's his name? Michael Taylor Thomas, James Michael, whatever.
Yeah, that dude.
Yeah, on the last sitcom he did.
Okay.
Whatever that was. Man of the House? I don't remember. Anyway. So, yeah.
Okay.
I think it may have something to do with those former cast members keeping their benefits through SAG.
Oh, okay.
At least that's other TV shows have done that.
Okay.
You know, you do a day of work and then you keep your benefits.
Yeah.
I could be wrong. Yep. So, yeah.
So
in other news, we're getting our Wednesday spinoff.
The Uncle Fester one?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I saw that. I don't know how to feel about that.
I don't either.
I don't know if that particular version of Fester is strong enough to carry his own show.
Yes.
And that's not a shot at Fred Armisen. I just don't. There's nothing that I saw that was like, oh, I'd like to see an entire show about him.
Right. He hasn't really done that much on the show.
No. And I mean, Christopher Lloyd, when he did his version of him, like at least he gave him some gravitas and some interesting story points. You know, the whole first movie where he doesn't really know if he's really Fester or not, like,
right,
was an interesting story, but I don't know. He wasn't in enough of the two seasons for me to really make a judgment call on it.
Well, you'll get your chance to make that judgment call.
Yeah. And I've definitely been wrong before about things where I thought something was a really bad idea and I wound up really enjoying it. So hopefully I'm wrong again. So I did, well, I should say that we did record a show last week that in the middle of, there was a thunderstorm that knocked out my power and corrupted the file, which is why there was no show last week. But we did talk about Wednesday, and I hadn't finished it yet. I have since finished the show, all 8 episodes. Okay. I liked it for the most part. I know last week you had said that, that you enjoyed the first half of the second season more than the second. And I would have to agree with that. The second half of the second season feels very rushed.
It does.
Lots of shit happens in a very short amount of time. And I don't know what precipitated that. Other than like, they were just trying to tie shit up. But I would assume that they thought that there was going to be another season because it's kind of ends on a cliffhanger, sort of.
Mm-hmm.
But within very compressed time, they tease in the first 4 episodes that there's this cult leader that's been on the loose. And it's he's connected to the siren student's mother.
Right.
And you get one episode where Casper Van Dien from Starship Troopers shows up as the cult leader. And by the end of the episode, he's been cooked alive and thrown into a fireplace, and he's just gone. And I was like, okay. Like, the buildup in the first four episodes felt like that was going to be a major part of the story, but it really wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't know if they were just trying to get through. They were like, all right, well, Steve Buscemi's character, we've got to deal with what's really going on with him. And then we've got to deal with the Hydes and the Slurp or whatever his name is. And so we're going to do two episodes that builds to one. And then the last episode will be the other. It just felt like they ran out of time. And the end where, you know, all of a sudden now Wednesday's on a mission to go find Enid because she's suddenly an alpha. I don't know. It seemed like some poor writing there. But I don't know. I'm assuming that Jenna Ortega is signed on for a third season. Is she's going to look after it for Enid, I guess? I don't know.
Yeah, maybe.
Or is the Fester show going to be the search for Enid? Where it's just him and Jenna, and then Jenna doesn't come back for season three.
No, there's season three, but it's not coming till summer 27.
Well, because they kind of implied that Nevermore is closed now.
Right.
So I don't know what they're going to do as far as a third season would go.
Yeah. And it's another case of it's like it's so far removed from the last season. It's like,
yeah, nobody's going to care.
You're going to have to do homework to remember what you've already seen.
Yeah.
And of course, all that money they spent on Lady Gaga's cameo.
Well, you know, they wrote her a song. I mean, they wrote a song for the show, and
well, she wrote a song for them.
Well, yeah. So, you know, they paid her back by putting her in one episode.
Yeah. I mean, Gwendolyn Christie was in the episode more than Lady Gaga.
Yeah. I did have a theory that we kind of talked about last week, but that's all lost to time. I really thought that Thing was somehow tied to Slurp or Isaac or whatever his name was. And I was right.
You were.
Spoiler alert, I guess. Thing was actually Isaac's right hand that gets possessed and severed in an accident.
Yeah.
And you know, they're telling the backstory of why Gomez doesn't have any abilities, but he actually did. And maybe some of that ability possessed Thing. So Thing is kind of like a member of the family. So I don't know whether or not I'm just picking up on clues better or it was just sloppy writing. I don't know. Because a lot of times
it was pretty telegraphed.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely things of like, they make a point of saying that Thing was found 30 years ago and it lines up with when Isaac was killed. And, you know, he goes to an emotional support group for dismembered parts. And then, you know, don't you want to know who your owner was or whatever they say? And it's like, of course they're telegraphing it to the bad guy. But, you know, we kept looking for, like, the dude would keep his right hand in a specific orientation the entire time, but his hand would move at times. And I don't know if that was to throw off the audience or whatever, because when he pulls the glove off, I thought what that you were going to see was like a clockwork hand, since he has like a clockwork heart.
Right.
And he just has a nub. And apparently once Thing is reattached to the nub, then he has like telekinetic powers, which I wasn't really sure that they had ever alluded to before. So I don't know. It was a little weird.
There's definitely some very disjointed storytelling.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like, I want to know Grandmama's continued story.
Well, it looks like you're going to get it with the tied up sister who wants to kill Wednesday, apparently.
Right.
And my kid was like, turn around, I want to see your face. I was like, they haven't cast the actual actress yet. This is just a placeholder.
In the TV show, they're played by the same actress.
That's what
Ellen Jones was both was Ophelia and Morticia.
That's what I kind of felt that they were going to do.
Yeah.
But I don't know why they didn't have Catherine Zeta-Jones as Ophelia and have her turn around.
I don't know. Maybe her face started to sag.
What else did you watch this week?
We had Strange New Worlds.
Yeah, we had the finale. Another hastily written finale, I feel.
And it felt like that other Star Trek show. What was the last one with Sinequa Green from Discovery? Walking Dead? Discovery.
Yeah.
It's like, and now we're going to show you the life they could have had.
So that's very much a ripoff of a Next Generation episode called The Inner Light, where Picard, they find a probe and Picard gets scanned and he basically lives another guy's life as a way for them to be remembered. And because the civilization gets wiped out because of climate change. And it's very much like Inner Light. Like it's very, It's like a very toned down version of it. But I really like Star Trek. I really like Strange New Worlds. They've done some really cool things, but I don't feel like they hit the mark with this finale. They took a character in Captain Patel, who is Pike's girlfriend, who has been on the ship since for all season, which was good because people needed to remember that she was there. But this whole story hinged on the fact that, you know, she's been telling Pike for the entire season, and really since the beginning of Strange New Worlds, that, you know, there is really no fate. There really is no destiny. Like, you're going to make your decisions based on the decisions that you think are right at the time. And those could be different. Like, the future's not written. And then within 5 minutes of the bad guy from a couple of episodes earlier showing up, she switches to, my destiny is to be the warden of this prison and there's nothing we can do about it and you just have to let me go. And I was like, whoa, like whiplash of like ideas that they've been trying to build for the entire season.
Right.
And I don't know whether or not they were told that they were only getting 3 seasons, but there are things in this episode that are set up so that if this was it, this was where they were going to go out. And they threw a bunch of stuff in, like the Kirk and Spock mind meld, where they're flying the ships together so that they can power this door. And I was like, being a Star Trek nerd and having seen all the original series, there's the first time they ever used the mind meld. Like Spock says, it's something that he hasn't really done before, and never to a human, only to a Vulcan. So right. It doesn't match canon. And again, I don't know if we're watching, I've never really been sure if Strange New Worlds is canon to the original series or not, or whether there's been enough things in time incursions and changing of things that things are off. But there's really like, there's a lot in this episode where it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Like if they had started the episode in the alternate reality where Pike and Batel get married and have a kid, and you're sitting there going, what is going on? And then it flashes to this fight with the alien entity, and you start to figure out that what you're watching is an alternate version of reality. I think that would have been better than you get up to a point and then you go into the alternate reality. And then basically she almost like has the Doctor Who thing of like regenerating with her hands, like her hands light up, and she suddenly defeats them and she takes her place and it's over. And I was just like,
yeah,
wow, this is super, super rushed. I think one of the problems with 10 episode seasons is the fact that when you don't have, like, we used to talk about filler episodes and how, you know, things would slow down for the filler episode and they might not be as good. But you at least had 20 episodes in order to get through to that end. Whereas for the 10 episode arc, if you don't have a good episode, if you don't have like three good episodes, that's like a third of your season that's not good.
Right.
And I thought, like, even though at the time the nurse that gets his eyes fried out, who shows back up to here, you know, that episode I thought was good with, like, you know, the body's being taken over, but they still think it's the guy, and like he's trying to manipulate everybody to bring him back. I don't think he was a strong enough foil to bring back as like the big bad guy at the end, because he doesn't really do anything. He gets a couple of followers. Right.
Well,
to, like,
I mean, basically he's just a vessel.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, basically. And like he has a bunch of followers like cut their eyes out at one point, which goes nowhere. It's like, okay, what was that for? Like, there's a lot of stuff that just doesn't, that gets dropped very hastily for other things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they could have, there's like a 15 minute chunk of this which is solving the problem of how to power the door, which I feel like if this was a Next Generation episode, they would have just been like, let's take a portable reactor down there, we'll plug it in, we'll get the power we need, and you go. But this required getting Kirk onto the Enterprise, talking him into the mind meld, doing the mind meld, then the thing where him and Spock are piloting the two ships together, and then they're firing the phasers. Like, that's 15 minutes of story that could have been shifted to the bad guy to kind of flesh out his story arc. I don't know. And I didn't understand. Again, I think this was supposed to be a finale, which is why they did it. But Pike comes back to the bridge and he's clearly distraught. He's clearly has lived this other life in his head that probably spanned like a lifetime. So like being back is like very weird for him. And he's seeing people that he hasn't seen in his mind for decades or whatever. And they're like, should we go? And he's like, yeah, whatever, just go as fast as you can. And Uhura goes, frequency, handling frequencies open, sir. And I'm like, who are you calling? I was like, that's not the way that works. Like, you calling the new planets? Like, I'm not sure what other to include her into that scene. Like, they could have given her something else to say besides hailing frequencies open. Like, just don't copy Nichelle Nichols. It was weird. Like, it was a very weird finale, for, to be sure.
Well, and it's not the finale. I mean, we know we're getting...
No, it's a season finale.
Two more seasons?
It's a season and a half.
Yeah, season finale.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was getting worried we were going to miss the puppets.
No.
But rest assured.
No, we're getting
puppets. We will not be spared. We're getting puppets. We're That's getting right. Puppets,
damn it. They're doing a puppet episode.
Yep.
Can't wait.
Well, we also got a Doctor Who reference.
We did. And I'm not sure how much of that was actually a Doctor Who reference. I think it's definitely played as one. Pellia, you know, there was that episode where Laan and Kirk traveled back in time to Toronto or wherever it was and run into Pellia. And there's been a lot of references this year to time travel and that you're not supposed to talk about it. And it's Pike that gives her a look that gets her to stop in the middle of it. And so while I do think it was an homage to Doctor Who, because the TARDIS is in an episode, a couple episodes back. I think the play on words was that, you know, she was going to talk about a time traveling something. And then that turned into traveling doctor. But the way that they left it in is time traveling doctor, you know, just as a nod.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd love to see Nkuti Gatwa show up as the Doctor in Star Trek. Like, that would be amazing.
Oh, my God.
I mean, if they can bring an animated series into live action, they could do a crossover with Doctor Who.
Well, even if it's a throwaway scene where, like, somebody, you know, goes into Pellier's quarters and, you know, they're in bed together or something stupid like that. But yeah, apparently there's a relationship between Star Trek and Doctor Who franchises.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's something there.
Yeah. I can't remember who the Star Trek guy was, but they're friends with either David Moffat or Russell T. Davies. And they did a joint panel where they talked about how they'd love to do a crossover at some point. But they didn't think Paramount would allow it. Yeah, it
was Kurtzman and Davies.
Kurtzman, yeah, and Davies. And so I think that all of this stuff is an homage to, like, we really want to do this, but we're never going to get the rights to it. So, you know, the visual effects team slips on a TARDIS here. They make a reference on another episode to a time-traveling doctor and...
Yeah.
Or I would even like to see if they could find an actress that looked like Carol Kane. Oh, fuck it. I mean, even Carol Kane, because she looked the same when they traveled back to the past anyway.
Right.
If they, like, the opening episode of the next season had a doctor that was already established that was running around with a companion named Pellia, and it was her, and she was leaving to go do something else, like, just the very beginning of the episode, just to tie it together, like, that would be amazing too.
So. I just think every fandom lives in the same multiverse, and at some point they're all going to cross over.
That would be cool. The Enterprise finds a ship of Daleks. That would be interesting.
Well, imagine if, like, Q and the Doc and the Master
get
together and they bring the Borgs and the Daleks together. That'd be kind of cool.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Definitely some fan fiction in there.
You know, throw some Jack Harkness in and come on.
Yeah, he's not really doing anything but conventions.
Yeah.
I'm sure he'd be up for it.
He might.
What else did you watch?
Did you Peacemaker?
Yeah. That was a pretty good episode. I think they're building up to some big cameos that are coming up that we haven't seen yet.
Yeah.
You know, I liked the fact that they explain where the door comes from and that the door has to be moved. You know, and there's a lot of it was very like they were trying to build up a lot of tension of whether Peacemaker was going to get caught, whether Argus was going to get into the closet, whether Eagly was going to die. Like there was a lot of buildup of tension in this episode. And I thought it was done pretty well for a comic book TV show. I think there was a lot in there that they could have like fumbled and like just gotten through, but I think they did it in a way that felt genuine, like any of those things could have happened and derailed the story, and you know, they just kept moving along, and like now what's her name?
Amelia?
Yeah. She's going to turn her back on Peacemaker and she's going to set him up. And I like that Rick Flagg, Senior commented on an injury that he got in Creature Commandos, you know, mm-hmm. tying that into the real world. Cause it'd be interesting to see those characters in live action.
I would love to see Creature Commandos in live action.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I really like Doom Patrol, and they did some really weird shit in Doom Patrol, so it can be done in live action.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though that's not really canon anymore.
Whatever. It's canon if you want it to be canon.
Yeah, but they don't want it to be canon. That's the thing.
Well, screw them.
You get to see Michael Rooker, like, half naked, running around a fire.
As Willie Nelson?
Yeah, that's pretty much who he is, right?
What do they call him? Mr. Cultural Appropriation?
Yeah, at one point, Economist calls him that. I thought that they were going to kill him off, but no, apparently he's got bigger things to do, like eating dried bird poop.
Yeah. But yeah, it was a good episode. It kind of, answered some questions,
mm-hmm.
which is always nice.
Did you watch Only Murders?
Oh, no, I didn't know the new one was out.
Yeah, they've released 3 new episodes.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, that'll be my homework.
There you go. You got homework for this week.
No, I started watching Hell of a Boss on Amazon.
Okay. Which is the same creator
because it came up as saying new episodes.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that it had 4 seasons before.
It was a YouTube show.
So I'm almost done with the first season. Huh?
I think it was on YouTube originally.
Oh, okay.
Because it's the same creator as Has Been Hotel.
Yes.
And they had started doing all their stuff on YouTube And I remember my kid watching Hell of a Boss, and she was like, yeah, we got to wait 3 months for the next episode. And she was like, she was going back and forth on a bunch of stuff. And then, she was surprised because, Hell of a Boss had seasons done before, Hazbin Hotel, and they went to series first with Hazbin Hotel. So she was like,
okay,
so I'll just have to wait until they put those on. So, yeah. And are you enjoying
Hello Boss? Yeah, it's kind of amazing how much they get away with.
Yeah. Well, again, it was a YouTube show, so they didn't have anybody to really, you know, rein them in with anything.
Right.
They could just do what they wanted.
What else have you been watching?
I watched a fairly recent movie this week, Sinners, which was
okay.
Michael B. Jordan plays twins.
Okay.
And it's set in the 1930s. It's about these two twin brothers who are opening a kind of like a speakeasy, their own juke joint, where they're going to play. They get a bunch of blues musicians together, and are you going to watch it? I don't know how much I want to spoil for you.
No, I'm not going to watch it.
Okay. So, turns out that they're in Louisiana. And while they are partying on the first night of their new place being open, there's a knock at the door, and there's three white people standing there who they think is the Klan. And it turns out that they're vampires, and it turns into a vampire movie in the middle.
Okay.
Very interesting. It did give me From Dusk Till Dawn vibes, but the African American version of it. The technology to make Michael B. Jordan twins has really come a long way from like Social Network.
Okay.
There are scenes where they interact where like previously, you know, like if you went to hand something to the other twin, it'd probably cut into a close up of your hand, like handing something off. And then it would go back to the wide shot. There are scenes where one brother gets bitten by the vampires and is dying in the other brother's arms, where it is so good. And then like there's a moving camera, and there's people getting in the way of the shot. And like it's an incredible like filmmaking exercise. Like it's done extremely well, and I really thought it was really cool. And then towards the end, after they defeat the vampires, there's one twin left, and then the Klan shows up, and then he's got to take out the Klan. Like it's a wild movie. It's bloody, and it's, you know, it's a horror film for sure.
Right.
But it's done really well. It's Ryan Coogler who did Black Panther. But I had seen like reviews that called it like the best movie ever. I don't know if I'd go that far. Like I don't ever agree with those when they're like, "Oh, this is the best thing ever." It's like I will keep my own list of what I think is the best movie ever.
Okay.
But it's very well done. It's nice to see, you know, there was no like white knight that shows up to help. Like there's no, they let the African American characters shine in this to a point where like you don't really see that in Hollywood films. Especially in this day and age, this, you know, the culture that we live in. So okay. It was cool. It was, it's, if you like horror films, you know, we're coming up to Halloween. You know, if this is your kind of thing, then I would say watch it because it's done very well.
Okay.
So, you know, take it for what it is.
Oh, anything else you watched?
No, that was the only movie I watched this week.
I watched the live action How to Train Your Dragon.
Ooh, okay.
Completely unnecessary film.
Yeah.
Really didn't do anything the animated movies did. But there's some really beautiful shots when the dragons are flying.
Yeah.
That I thought were really cool. But the movie is pretty much the first movie.
Yeah, I mean, there were, when the trailer came out, they did a shot-to-shot comparison of that in the animated film.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it was like, it was literally like they were just using the animated film as storyboards.
Yeah. I mean, really, really nice stuff with the dragons.
Okay.
And you see all the different kinds of, you know, there's the two-headed dragon and then there's the little fat dragon and, you know, yeah. Toothless and, yeah.
So that's like the best
Gerard part. Gerard Butler playing the live action version of his animated character.
Yep.
Kind of interesting.
So would you say that the dragons are the best part?
Oh, definitely.
Okay.
There's scenes where they go, like, obviously people have seen the first animated film, so I wouldn't call it a spoiler.
Yeah.
But they go to the island where all the dragons are nesting.
Yeah.
And the Vikings attack them. And they all come flying out of the cave. And it was like really cool. And then there's, you know, the super dragon.
Yeah.
Who appears. And it's like, that was really cool. And then, you know, when the battle is resolved and the kids come in flying on their dragons, it's like, it was really, really beautiful.
Okay.
Now, if only they could have, like, you know, made up a new story or something instead of just, rehashing, we're just going to do this. Yeah, with live actors. We're going to do what Disney's doing because, you know, it's kind of working for them.
Yeah, I wonder what the decision was, like, where that came from to make it as a live-action film.
Yeah.
Or, you know, a CGI animated... Well, I guess the first one was CGI animated. To have live actors put in the movie. You know, whether they really felt that strongly about the first movie or they're like, hey, How to Train Your Dragon's popular, let's remake that.
Yeah.
There's no original ideas.
No, unfortunately.
It's literally what came before that we can redo now.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe we'll have an animated Only Murders.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
They go the opposite way. All right, now we're going to do a cartoon. Are you excited about the new Tron film?
No, absolutely not.
No?
We kind of mentioned it.
Okay.
I don't know. I mean, I get that it's time to bring the program into the real world, but I don't know. I'm not really excited about it. I mean, we get to see, you know, Jeff Bridges again.
Yeah. I mean, and the latest, I don't know if you saw the latest trailer. I think it's a little bit more of the finished effects of the film. And it seems like Jeff Bridges, like Kevin Flynn, is almost like a ghost in the machine, almost. Like he did not survive the reintegrating with Clue in Legacy, but that has like uploaded his consciousness into like the mainframe almost. And from what I can gather, like the story of Ares is, I think he is the memories of a fallen soldier. And the stuff in the trailer where he's talking about looking for things he doesn't understand, there's a shot where he's looking through pictures, and I think he's trying to find his family. And I think it's going to be one of those things of like, he's going to realize that in order to save humanity, he's got to sacrifice himself because he wants the other dude's family to live. You know, because like he's probably got kids or whatever.
Okay.
So I think it's going to be, I think that's where the gist of the film's going to be. I'm kind of interested in it just because I want to see the Tron stuff in the real world.
Yeah. I mean, what they've shown so far, the light cycles in the city are kind of cool. And, you know, slicing the police car in half.
Yeah.
And the gates, you know, flying over, a modern city.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I mean, it's not unlike my must-see list.
Okay.
I will probably see it. Although, it looks like one of those films that you should see in the theater.
Yeah.
And you know how much I love being around people.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, my kid was all excited. She's like, can we go? Can we go to the theater to see this? And I was like, sure, why not? So I'll probably end up seeing it in the theater. But yeah, I get if you're not gonna.
Yeah, I mean, it looks interesting. It just doesn't look like it's something I have to take the time to see right away.
Yeah.
But it could, I mean, I could be totally wrong. It could be a great movie.
I just really hope they explain why Sam Flynn and Cora isn't in it. Because that seemed to be the direction they were going in with Legacy, that like he downloads everything into the necklace and he's got some idea of how to free or help or change or whatever what's going on in the grid, and to not have them involved, but have, Derringer in it as some like the new stuff from the military is from him, but it looks just like the old system. You know, they're going to have to explain that, and not that the character of Tron was really in Legacy. He was as Rinzler, but he gets redeemed at the end of Legacy. And is he going to show up? Are we going to get a CGI Bruce Boxleitner? I don't know. Like I'm kind of interested to see where that story unfolds given the history of the Tron franchise. Like they just if they just do it name only, it's going to be a little weird. Because I think even the cartoon dealt with the character of Tron that they did on Disney. So, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Apparently, Garrett Hedlund was very evasive when asked if Sam would appear in this movie.
Well, hopefully he'll pop in there.
Maybe it'll be the big reveal.
Maybe. Is there anything else that's coming out in the theater that, that you would even consider going to the theater to see?
No.
No?
No. Except maybe the Jonas Brothers Christmas movie.
You're not going to line up in costume for Wicked Part 2?
Absolutely not.
No?
And now that Kristen Chenoweth has shut off her mouth, I wonder if that's going to affect the movie box office.
Did we ever discuss Wicked? I don't remember.
Way back when the first part came out.
Okay. I don't remember whether you liked it or not.
I did like it.
Did you?
I did like it. I thought it was pretty true to the stage, the musical.
Yeah.
The book is very heavy with the number of characters it keeps introducing.
Okay.
That it gets a little hard to follow. It's a little Lord of the Rings for me. But apparently the second part is going to expand on Dorothy's role, because in the book and in the musical, she's got a very brief sequence.
Yeah.
You know, basically where she throws the water on the witch and she melts, and that's the end.
Right.
But that's not the end.
Yeah, I had some issues. I didn't see it until it came out on digital. I liked it okay. It was fine. My issues were like, why are there no little people in Munchkinland? Like, if you're trying to say that this is the same universe as The Wizard of Oz, like, Dorothy shows up and kills the Wicked Witch of the North or the East. Wait,
Wicked Witch of the West.
No, well, who does she drop the house on? She drops the house on the
disabled sister. East.
On East, okay.
Yes.
And when she's walking around Munchkinland, there are no posters up for the witch. And right. In this one, the witch dies, and there's all kinds of shit up that they tear down of, like, you know, nobody mourns for the wicked.
Mm-hmm.
And I know, like, it's a different take on it and stuff, but then don't try to connect it to the 19 whatever movie.
37?
Yeah, whatever that was. Like,
yeah.
Like, then make it its own thing. But they were trying so hard to tie it into the movie that everybody knows.
Right.
Which, I mean, it doesn't even make sense, because Elphaba looks nothing like the Wicked Witch of the West in the movie.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. It was fine, I guess.
It was fine. You didn't think Ariana Grande should have gotten the Oscar?
No, because I felt like she was just acting like I see her act in, like, every interview she's ever been in.
Yeah, like, and she looks horrible these days.
Like, when I see her in an interview, I'm like, she's, like, when I saw her act, it's just like, okay, she's just acting like she does in any of the interviews, like when she's on late night or whatever. Mm-hmm. And
right.
I was just like, okay, is she acting? Like, the chick that played Elphaba, I thought she did a decent job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I liked her. I liked, you know, I like her voice. I like the way she sings the songs and stuff, but I don't know. I don't think Margaret Hamilton was belting shit out like, you know, this chick would.
Well, she was the bad guy, and oftentimes when you make a movie about a real person, you know, the loser, the enemy, is often depicted worse off than they are.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what the response is to part two, if it's worth the wait, or if they should have just edited it in such a way that they could have done like a 3-hour film and be done with it.
I mean, wasn't the first part long?
It was long. It was too long.
Wig. Really? I got to spell the whole thing out? Yeah, I mean, part one was 2 hours and 40 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think there was probably a lot of fluff in there. I don't know how much you needed to go over a lot of the things that happened at the school. But I don't know. I guess they have to build up some of those characters.
Well, like I said, the book is kind of heavy.
Yeah, I asked. So I had asked my kid about whether she wanted to read the book, because I'm always like buying her books and shit. And I said, oh, did you want me to buy you Wicked? Because she had seen the movie and she was like, no, I've heard like, I haven't heard great things about the book. And I was like, what are you talking about? And she's like, in the book, they go into like her periods and stuff, I guess, at some point. And I was like,
I don't remember that.
I don't know. There was a bunch of stuff that she had like rattled off where I was like, oh, okay, then I won't buy you the book. So, yeah. I don't know. You know, they split it into two parts, so they have another shot at the Oscars, I guess.
Well, good luck with that.
Do you know that Wicked won an award called a Queerty?
Okay.
they have categories such as Badass, and Chapel Roan won this year. They have Breakout Musical Artist, Comedy Movie, which was, the winner was The Substance, which was not really a comedy. I guess it's all queer awards, which is good. I guess that's inclusion, right?
Yeah, sure.
So, I just learned something new. I don't know if these are televised. It looks like they've been going on since 2013.
Okay. Well, there's an award for everything.
There is. Last year's, they had a category called Best Feud.
Ooh.
Yeah, and that winner was...
Who won that?
Coco Montrese and Alyssa Edwards, which I guess are two drag queens. Oh.
Well, you know that Coco is somebody we worked with.
Really?
Uh-huh.
Wait. Let me see. Okay, he looks familiar. What was his first name when I knew him? It wasn't Coco, was it?
It was not Coco. Okay. No.
Martin?
Is it Martin?
The trivia on IMDb has Coco as Martin Cooper.
Okay.
You'll have to tell me later on where we worked with him at.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think they went by Lenny, maybe?
Lenny? We'll have this conversation.
We'll have a conversation later.
You got anything else for this week?
No.
No? All right. Well, if you want to get in touch with us, you can always send us an email at info@dancemonkeypodcast.com. You can follow us on Facebook and YouTube and let us know you're listening. So until next week, this is Chris.
This is John.
Have a good week.
Remind me to tell you about the time I spent with the time-traveling doctor I once knew.